Joe Rogan Podcast. Check it out.
The Joe Rogan Experience.
Train by day, Joe Rogan Podcast by night, all day.
What's up, champ? How are you?
I'm good.
Good to see you.
Good to see you again.
So you have been on a journey, my friend. A lot of things have happened. First of all, congratulations on securing this fight. That is a big deal. A lot of people doubted it was going to happen. You were right.
Thank you. Yes, it was a big deal. It wasn't easy. But we finally get it. You know, I get a help of a lot of people, and the Saudi were very interested about this fight.
Yeah, it was one of those fights where you had to take a big gamble by relinquishing your UFC crown and leaving.
I didn't relinquish anything.
You didn't relinquish it.
Yeah.
Fill me in then. Tell me what happened.
Well, we didn't come to an agreement.
You didn't come to an agreement.
Yeah.
So you decided, I'm not signing with the UFC. You're a free agent.
Yes.
And then did negotiations then start for the Tyson Fury fight? How did it start?
You know, it's been like 4 years since Tyson Fury and I, we've been going back and forth on social media. So there was a little bit of a warm-up somewhere there. And it kind of like take a couple months before we get to a conversation. You know, it wasn't just easy. Those boxing promotion. The boxing world is a little wild.
Yeah, it's a little different.
Yeah, it's completely different. It's a different animal.
In what way? Like, explain to us.
Way that they do things, you know, this guy from this promotion fighting with this guy against this guy from this promotion who has a better position, who has what to lose, who is getting what, and then how them kind of like put things, I will not say manipulate, but a little bit like that. Everybody trying to adjust things on his own benefit. Mm-hmm. Look what is good for him, which is good, but yeah.
A lot of boxing fights don't get made.
Yeah.
They get talked about for a long time, like Tyson Fury and Usyk. For a long time was Terrence Crawford and Errol Spence. They get talked about for a long time, and they almost get made, and then they don't get made. And they almost get made, and then they don't get made.
A lot of politics behind.
Yeah.
A lot of promotion that would be behind the fight just to, you know, push their position. Everybody's pushing his position. It's not mostly about the fight. It's about like, okay, what we control the game. Do we have enough control here? Do we control everything? Yeah.
So was it frustrating for you? Because I imagine there was a while where you weren't sure whether or not it was going to be made.
It wasn't frustrating. You know, before I made my decision, when I separated with the UFC, and I knew, I mean, long time before, like I remember even when I fought Seringan, even before that fight, I was telling myself, and I was even telling this on interview, like, okay, if this is the end, then he has to end my way, you know? So, not because I was sure that it's going to happen. I knew that he could have not happened. Right. But I was to be in peace with my decision. So that's the thing about it. And I'm very happy that it happened. Makes it even better. But I knew there was a risk that it didn't happen. But I had to take a chance.
So what was the holdup with the UFC? Like what led you to not sign?
There was a lot of frustration over the years. I think since my fight against my first fight against Stipe, my relation with the UFC never been the same.
Really?
Yeah.
Why? In what way?
I don't know. I tried everything. I feel like I wasn't in the right place. And after that, then I get the Derek Lewis fight, who was like the worst fight, and that didn't help me at all, you know. So I think from that moment I was already put in some position out there, because I came back, I won multiple fight, and they came with a new deal. This was after Junior Dos Santos back in June 2017, and then he was Mick who called for a new deal, and then until my team was on the way to the negotiation, who was in Anaheim when Stipe and DC was fighting the second time, and then I'm like, no, Dana said no new deal for Francis. He still have 3 fights on his contract. And to be honest, I was even happy because I wanted to knock that deal out. By that time, I understood a little bit about the market. I just wanted to fight out my contract and renegotiate as free, you know. But then, month after, we get a call from, I think, was Hunter or somebody there. Yeah, they say, oh, yeah, let's talk about a new deal for Francis. And at that time, there's not a new deal. We just want to fight, you know. It's already September, we are in September, and my last fight was in June. I want to fight, you know. So the new deal staff be holding me back. They didn't give me a fight.
Because they wanted you to sign a new deal.
They wanted me to fight a new deal.
You didn't want to sign a new deal. You wanted to fight your contract down.
I wanted to fight my contract down.
So they were slowing things down.
They were slowing things down. So that if you see like the interval between my Junior Dos Santos fight and Jairzinho Rozenstruik fight was almost a year.
Mm-hmm.
I mean.
It's also COVID, right?
Yeah, there was a COVID in between. But without COVID, he would have still been like 10 months, right? And then from Rozenstruik to Stipe, same thing. Then Stipe to Sirigan, almost the same thing. He was mostly about the contract.
So then finally you fight out the contract, and then what happens?
We didn't come to an agreement at all, because during this time there was still a negotiation pushing and stuff, and I wanted to fight out that contract.
Mm.
Proposal of money, obviously they know my position, because I was pressured financially. You know, when you have a fight, you expect to fight at least at that level. At that moment, I was expecting to fight at least 2 or 3 times a year, right? Then I get to the point that I have one fight, I have nothing. So I was limited of income, stuff like that.
Mm.
Then I started borrow money. Even before the Stipe fight, when they announced that fight, I need to call to ask for advance of my purse to finance my training camp. I have no money.
Mm.
But I was there training and getting ready for almost a year. So I took some advance. So
that's got to be very stressful.
Yeah, but one thing, and that's like one thing that I'm always grateful about my life. I used to this situation. And I told myself, like, these people, they don't know me. I can live out of nothing. You know, I live in the street, bro.
Yeah.
Like, and then I'm here in Las Vegas. You think, like, okay, I don't fight. I just have to change everything. I'm able to live out of the bare minimum. And I don't care if I walk around, you guys say, oh, champ, oh, that's a UFC contender, whatever it is. Man, I just live based off what is in my base of my asset. I don't live beyond that. That's why, like, I don't really trust those credit card system or those loan and stuff. That's America shit, bro. I don't trust that, because when it lets you down, it lets you down.
Yeah, for sure.
I check my wallet. Whatever is in my wallet, I live based on that. Mm. I don't go loan and stuff unless, like, I'm forced at some point, or it's an investment, like having taken a money, borrowing money for your training camp, you know.
Right.
That's a different thing.
So you win the Ciryl Gane fight, then what happens?
Well, then first Dana didn't come to the ring, to the octagon for the belt.
Mm.
Yeah, and then after that, they get this dinner, invite us to this dinner, trying to smooth things out. Again, the condition at that time, I think at that time for me, it was more than a contract. It was like a lot of frustration from the past almost 3 years, you know. I'm like, okay, I have no guarantee that signing this contract, I will not get into what I have been to in the past 3 years. So how about we change something that will make me feel secure?
And what did you want to change?
A lot of things. I want in my contract, first of all, I want a contract without extension, because I have seen how they can abuse of those extensions.
Can you explain to me how the extension works?
Oh, well, I mean, there's not a way that it works. The extension is that, because they say if you deny a fight, they can extend you for 6 months or something. If you're hurt and can't fight, they can extend you for 6 months or something. But the problem, the UFC is the judge and the party. They decide if they will extend you. You have no say. So when they say, oh, you fight tomorrow, you say, no. Now I'm like, okay, no problem. We were just checking. And then maybe a week after, you will receive a letter of extension, like your contract has been extended for 6 months. And that's what happened with me.
If you're injured, like say if they propose a fight for you, like here we are in September. Mm-hmm. If they propose a fight for you in Madison Square Garden in November and you say, I can't because I'm injured.
Oh, no, that extension.
Then they put up a six-month extension in the contract.
That's extension. That's
anytime you refuse a fight? Is that what it is?
Yeah. Mm. And refuse is subjective.
Right.
Depend of
it,
the
it
term
could
of
mean
subjective.
You can't fight because you're injured, like when you tore your knee ligaments.
Oh, no, like, that is an extension.
Extension?
Yeah, yeah. That's clearly an extension. For example, my extension, for example, the first one, when I fought Stipe, right? And I have been fighting almost once a year in the past 3 years. Mm-hmm. I fought Stipe on March 27th, and then April 2nd, Mick is calling my team. And I tell them, like, oh, I want to fight. Stay active. I want to fight twice this year again. Summer, which is July or August, and December. And then April 2nd, they are calling to ask me to fight, and I was getting ready. It was a big moment in my life. I'm like, I'm bringing this trophy home. This trophy
right.
home, right?
You're the champ now.
Right. And they called to ask me if I can fight in June 12th. It was June 12th, yeah. June 6th or something like that. Well, I'm like, bro, give me a time. I mean, they say, no, we were just offering in case because Francis said he want to fight twice this year. I'm like, yes, I do. And I said July the earliest and or August and December. And I know that I can take 1-2 weeks, 2-3 weeks out, maybe go home, do stuff and come back.
Mm.
And I'm like, no, totally understandable. He was just to check in case it's work for you. Mm. He wasn't really. A couple months after, I received an extension about that. But you know why? Because my contract originally supposed to end in May 20th of that year.
Mm-hmm.
So if my contract end on May 20th at that year, that means the championship clause kicks in, which is 1 year. But if they extend me, I have to go all the way to the extension before the championship clause kicks in. So it was more time.
Mm.
Yeah. So, and when they say, no, it's okay, no problem, we were just checking. And I was in Cameroon on May 19th. So 1 day before my original contract, which was 14 months, expired, and then the championship kicked in, I received an extension letter. I was in Cameroon suffering of COVID at that time. So I received an extension letter. So now I'm extended until November 20th.
Even though you told them you wanted to fight in July?
Yeah.
So they just tack on. So
oh, no, they just tacked on. And you have nothing to say. Mm. It's effective from the moment that they send that letter out.
Okay, so your new contract, you wanted no extensions. That's one thing.
Yeah, makes sense. That's one thing.
Okay. What was the, was one of them the ability to box?
One of them was the ability to box. They said that wasn't an option. Boxing is dead. It's not possible. This and that.
Now, what does that feel like to you, knowing that Conor McGregor did it and fought Floyd Mayweather and made $100 million? What is that like for you to be sitting there being told that you can't box?
Well, I don't used to take what people tell me for an answer.
Mm.
Right?
Right.
I used to do my own thing.
Right.
On my own way.
Right.
And it seems to work pretty good. So, but I wasn't going to force to change everything. I wasn't expecting to go there and demand this, demand that, and just have everything. You know, it's like, it's a big company. It's like an institution.
Right.
You know, so there's a way that they do things.
Right.
And that can change. So I'm like, okay, if so, let's take boxing out. Why? Because give me three fights. Contract of three fight. I knew that I can knock a three fight contract in a year. Then from that moment I was free. Because I want a middle ground, like an alternative, a way to get out by giving something out,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Right.
Still get something at the end.
Got it.
You know? Because it's really hard to get in the negotiation and just like, oh, I want this, I want that, and want that, and
right.
stop there. At some point you have to compromise, to push back. Give something in order to get something.
Yeah.
So stuff like that was the thing that I was about it. And that seems to be attractive to them. So one three fight deal, no extension, that seems to be attractive. Two fight was supposed to be potentially John Jones fight and rematch. And one fight is the trilogy with Stipe.
Mm.
That was the request, and work for both parties. Then we get to another point, sponsorship deal. Why sponsorship deal? Because before that, I had a deal. After the Stipe fight, I had a deal on the table for over $1 million for a cryptocurrency wallet. So I was going to have, like, I think 1.2 million, which is the money that I never have in the fight. I was going to have that in the sponsorship. And the deal was this close to sign. And then they announced the crypto.com deal.
Mm.
And then the party pulled off. I'm like, hey, bro, we can't do. You understand our position. You can be carried this in the octagon while behind we are trying to push.
Mm.
You know.
Did you try to make a deal with crypto.com?
No.
No?
At that moment, crypto.com, they don't care.
Right.
Because
they have a deal with the UFC.
They have the deal with the UFC. And you're going to wear it, whether you like it or not.
Right.
You don't have a say.
Mm.
And now I'm like, I think this is messed up.
Mm.
We need to solve this. I need a sponsorship. I need a right to have my own sponsor. Fighters should be able to have 2-3 sponsorship on their gears. I mean, I understand that we want to make the sport grow, make it nice, but we can also, meanwhile, you can have a department who check all those sponsors, like, oh no, this is not good because of this reason.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't represent the sport well, right?
Right.
But there are a lot of good stuff out there that will also help fighter to, you know, to provide, to get a little more money. And that was another discussion. I'm like, oh, can't do that.
Mm.
That's not work. I'm like, okay. So what is working exactly? They make me some kind of like a proposal, which I don't know, it doesn't even make sense. But and the other one was like, because of the fact that I was in this position for so long and I was just so powerless. The reason why I stay in this position, why I keep holding my ground, was only because in the contract, there is what they call the sunset clause. So meaning like after 5 years from the beginning, from the day you sign the contract. Doesn't matter what is in the contract expires. The extension, they can extend you past that date. So my end goal from the beginning, from the moment that I know that, okay, I'm going to hold this ground, I knew that I have to face some obstacle. So my end goal was the 5 years, the sunset.
Okay.
I had the sunset date in my mind, December 9th, 2022. I had that day in my mind for like almost 3 years. So when I was receiving all this extension letter, I mean, I couldn't fight it either way. But in my mind, I was just like, it's okay. One thing that I know, I just focus on December 9th, 2022, and then you will be fine. So after that, then I'm like, okay, if I sign a new deal, I don't know, even if there is not extension, there have been a proof of like, how could I say, in a nice way, abuse of power, right? But why are we in this position? This is the position that every fighter get into, right? I mean, being feeling powerless. We might be many hundreds of us, but it's every individual at time. We are very separated. Every case is separated. So, which means you're just weak. It's just you against the big monster, which is the company, the institution, so you can't fight. How can we make it make sense? I mean, we are not going for union, but at least you guys sometime before make some decision, how about you have somebody in the room who can understand things from our perspective? Because I do believe that all the decision that you might make will hurt us is not meant to hurt, but maybe just because you don't understand our position. Maybe if somebody there is speaking for us, which again, I don't know who it could be, but just be mindful that, okay, this is fighter position. Maybe that will help.
So you get through all this, and then where did it break down to the point where you had to walk away?
He break down December 6th, I think was December, no, December 20, I don't remember, 2019 or 22nd, something like that. I had a dinner with Hunter. After we've been going through stuff, he said no to this, no to that, you know. But I have a focus. I know that, okay, if I give 3 fights here, since they are willing to take the 3 fights, it's going to make, you know, I don't want to break this relationship like this. I don't want it to be a war.
Right.
I can't stand. I can't stand in this. But, so we can get trying to fix things up. But when we met again, that day was the first time over all this time that we have to talk about the financial aspect. I mean, he has to propose a financial aspect.
Right. So he proposed it at dinner.
Yeah, he proposed at dinner. And then I just like, this guy is making fun of me.
Making fun of you?
Yeah.
So it was disrespectful? It was like not valuable enough for you?
No, at all.
And you're the champ at the time.
Yeah. I mean, no, at all. Like when you're talking about pay-per-view, then you're negotiating pay-per-view, and then you see number like 1.25 pay-buys and stuff like that, and the pay-per-view is going from 60 to $80 in the past 5 years, and you realize that the 0.25 that is on top of it is just out of the $20 that been added on. I'm like, come on, man. It's not my first pay-per-view contract, and
just wasn't enough money.
What, it wasn't even about the money, even how it was structured, even how it was. I'm like, this doesn't make sense. You know, I went home and I was so, I don't know, frustrated or disappointed. I don't know how I can describe. But one thing I know, I went online. I'm like, I'm missing Christmas with my family. I'm here training for a potential John Jones fight, which might not happen. What for? Seems like we're not getting anywhere close. I booked a flight that night to go to Cameroon. And I was in Cameroon in the Christmas. And then a couple of days after, I received a text from Mick Manor, who was, you know, Mick usually sometimes just send me a friendly text to check on me. And then we talk a little bit, and then he talk about the contract. Like he heard that we didn't come to a term. I say yes. Say like, is it anything that I can do? I'm like, I don't think so. We didn't just have an agreement. And he said, how about I make it, we talk again. Let's get in the meeting with Hunter again and talk. And as I said, Mick always be nice. And I couldn't say no. I'm like, yes, let's try. In fact, I wish it could have worked, you know. Because, to be honest, I never, like, really, before all this, I never imagined a life out of the UFC. I thought he would be, like, my fighting platform until my retirement or something. Mm-hmm. But clearly things has changed along the way.
So even when they came back a second time, it still was not enough.
Yeah. Because when they came back, and all this time that we've been talking, they've been talking about the, what is the term? Back pay. Yeah, we're going to back pay you. Because from all the fight that I've been refusing to renegotiate, the pay that they were proposing, they said they're going to back pay me that. When they come out now and then make pay better, and now I'm like, okay, the back pay and this and that. And I'm like, no, everything is in this contract. This is it. Then I'm like, okay. Well, then I don't know what to say if you say this is it, because it's against your word. You say something, and now you say this is it. I still don't have the back pay, bro.
So they proposed the back pay, and then they took it away?
Yeah, they've been proposing the back pay before.
Mm-hmm.
If, after the Siri fight, they get the invite us to a dinner, and then keep remind me how they're going to back pay me,
right,
everything. Because I have a good proposal at the time. But I know that proposal, and he was a good money, but I know he was just a bait to sign a contract.
Mm-hmm.
He was just to put the pen on the paper. He wasn't really like a good fit, like how they want to give me a good contract. And they get to the point that they're like, no, everything is in this. I'm like, okay, I don't see it. And we were kind of like silenced for a couple of seconds, like, what's that mean? I'm like, I don't know. Then we hang up.
Okay, so at that point, do you start to talk to people like the PFL and ONFC? No,
at that point, I stopped. I didn't do anything. When we stopped that conviction, I didn't do anything. Until, like, I start to see all these things on social media. And then I saw the Dana press conference, like, oh, we get rid of Francis. Yes, he's not getting any younger. He's injured. I'm like, yes, he's not getting any younger, but you were trying to have him. He's injured, but you were trying to have him. Now you didn't come to an agreement. You're batching him. That's when I started to respond, because I never really like want this like to be something on me. And I was expecting, like, maybe they go out there and just say, oh, unfortunately, we didn't come to agreement and this and that. And thank you. Good luck. Right?
Mm-hmm.
and then we move away. But that's not how they do things over there.
So you decide to start talking to other people then?
Yeah.
And who do you talk to first?
People started to reach out. I wasn't even the one talking to people. And, you know, at that time, I just want to let this weight drop out of my shoulder. For some reason, I feel relief. I feel relief. There was so much pressure into that process. You know, and I was in Cameroon. I'm like, man, just live your life, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever is yours out there will come to you. Like, but I get the first person that reached out was Pete Murray from PFL. And then I was just like, yes, let's hear him out. And he came out. We speak. He asked, like, what I'm looking for and stuff. We speak. I'm like, ah, looks good. A couple of days after, he made a proposal. I didn't even ask for not anything. But when he make a proposal, I look at the structure of that proposal. I'm like, this is good. You know, everything was being taken in consideration, you know. Obviously, there's always going to be a way of to negotiate in a contract. But the way that they structured it, I was already happy. I'm like, I think this guy is trying to make me happy.
Yeah, right? Well, they need someone like you.
Yeah.
The PFL doesn't really have the big stars.
Yeah. So, but we keep that contract. And at that time, I'm like, let's wait. I'm not rushing to anything. Take some time and everything, and then.
So you didn't sign that yet?
No, I didn't sign. No. We also get to a Chatry. Even Chatry reach out. We talk, same thing, and then a couple of days, they send their own contract. But when I was putting that contract next to the PFL one, it was day and night.
The PFL was much better.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the
PFL put a clause in to allow you to box?
Yeah. No, boxing was first for me, right?
And would the PFL be involved in the boxing promotion?
That was up to me.
Okay.
That was up to me. But they didn't really, like, want to. It's not their expertise. But if they can help in some way or be involved in some way, again, it's up to me, okay. Right? So, very independent contract. So, but I was more looking about like boxing. That's the first time that I started to have dialogue about boxing and stuff, you know.
And I know there were some conversations with you fighting. There was Deontay Wilder they talked about. I think they talked about Dillian White.
He was Deontay Wilder. We had a conversation with Deontay Wilder team, even with him. I personally like was in the meeting with him, conference with him, that we were talking about a potential to fight him.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that was going well, and I think even to this day, we are kind of like open about it. It's just along the way he has a potential opportunity right away that. They say, okay, we had like to pursue the conversation about what we have here. And it was understandable. We were like, okay, then let's explore maybe after. And then right after that, I have my own. I started a conversation with for the Fury fight. Yeah. Because I get a call, I was driving to the airport, and then I get a call to meet in New York for some conversation about the Fury fight. And then when I get in New York next week, we schedule that on next week. I get in New York, we get to the room, I meet the people. It was the right people. We spoke. I hear them out. And I'm like, I knew them, right? And I'm like, okay, this is legit. I think with these people behind this fight is going to happen. That's where I now put them in contact with my team to negotiate, because they wanted me to do everything. Let's negotiate. I'm like, I don't do negotiation. I listen. I talk about like how I would like things to go, but I don't like to negotiate personally.
Right.
Oh, I want this. I deserve this. I'm that. You know, I'd rather have somebody do that on my behalf.
Right. Somebody do that on your behalf, and you want to respond to a good deal. You want to a good deal brought to you.
Yeah.
Okay.
I want somebody. It's always good to have somebody in the mirror that would take the temper of both parties.
Right.
Because a deal can fall off just off because somebody's mad and this, and then like his ego take over and the deal is off, right?
Right.
But when there's somebody in between, and you always come to like, okay, it's not him.
Right.
And they still think about it. And that's what's happened. Because sometime with my team, they was frustrated, and I'm like, oh no, this is not working. And then they will come to you, and then you will talk nice. You know, be a nice cop. Have no problem. I'm like, no. But my team is saying this because of they didn't mean to offend you, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know.
Got it. Frustrating, right?
Yeah. I mean, no, not frustrating. I mean,
complicated.
Yeah. But over the time, you learn, you understand how it works, and it's pretty easy.
Okay.
It's pretty easy.
So you're in the driver's seat now, because you've left the UFC. You have all these opportunities on the table, possibly Deontay Wilder. Then it becomes Tyson Fury. So when do you know that that fight is actually going to take place? Because I know there was a
June.
June.
That was in June. That was in June. We locked that fight. It was concluded. Everything was set.
So for all those months from December to June, you're essentially just trying to find where you're going to land.
Yeah, but before that, I have... I agree the deal with the PFL. I think it was in March, but I made the request. I say, let's just figure out what would be next, my next boxing fight before we sign the deal.
So you haven't signed the deal with the PFL?
I haven't signed the deal.
Is it possible? Let me ask you this.
Okay.
Is it possible that you go and fight Tyson Fury and then the UFC comes back to you and says, listen, let's make this right and let's fight John Jones? Is that possible?
It's possible, but...
That's what I want.
No, it's possible.
That's what I want.
It's possible, but they have to go to the PFL now.
Oh, because does the PFL have a contract signed?
Yeah.
You did sign a contract.
Yeah, I did sign. I say okay. In March, it wasn't signed.
Right.
I signed in May.
Do you think the PFL would allow that?
Oh, the PFL is down for that.
Really?
Yeah, it's down for that.
Wow.
The PFL is down for that.
So the PFL would let you fight in the UFC. But what happens if you beat John Jones, you become the UFC heavyweight champion again? That's a problem.
I don't know. Maybe he'll be a special fight, a special belt or something.
Yeah.
Maybe not like a UFC belt. I don't know.
Yeah, the UFC probably would not be down for that.
Like yeah.
You win the title and then go fight in the PFL. That would be a problem.
No,
yeah.
No. Not the title. But, yeah. You know, to be honest, I don't worry about the title. The title is not what I worry about. I worry about that fight, that challenge.
Yes.
I wouldn't care if it was a fight without a title. You know, so...
Right.
I don't need a UFC title.
Especially with that fight. Like,
right?
What difference does it make? It's John Jones and you. Everybody
no, that
knows.
Fight is bigger than a title.
Yes, bigger than
the
title.
The fight is bigger than a title.
No doubt.
So... Deep inside me, I still have a little bit of hope, even though I know it's going to be hard, but you never know.
Boy, that would be a big gamble for them, because if you win, then you're the champ, but you're signed with the PFL.
Yeah.
Ooh. Oh. Okay, so June, you get the Tyson Fury bout negotiated. Did you get everything you want? Was it easy?
Again, you don't walk in a room for a contract to get everything that you want.
Right.
And at that moment, I was just so happy to get that fight happen. Because from that fight, a lot of things would be open. That fight will open a lot of doors. You know, sometimes, even in the negotiation, sometimes you have to see long term, like what it comes with.
Mm-hmm.
Now I get this fight. I think it should have been the focus, right?
Mm-hmm.
After this fight, imagine, hypothetically, I go out there, knock Tyson Fury out. What do you think will happen for me now? Where does that leave me?
If you knock Tyson Fury out, you're the biggest combat sports star in the world.
Okay.
That's what I think.
So is that everything that you will want?
You want the cash. You gotta get the cash.
Then you will get everything.
Yeah, then you get the cash. Well, if you knock Tyson Fury out, the real money's in a rematch.
Exactly.
That's the real money. That's crazy money.
Hey, that's what
are they
I'm,
giving you crazy money for the Tyson what,
that's
Fury
what,
fight?
Huh?
Are they giving you crazy money for the Tyson Fury fight?
Yeah, they're giving me a good money. And very great condition. I like a lot of component of this contract, who was like the treatment that they were giving me, the access, how easy they make stuff for me. You know, like, it's going to be the first time that my family going to attend to my fight, and I don't even have to think about that.
Mm.
They're going to work on it. They're going to figure out how to bring my mom, my sister, my brother out to Saudi to watch that fight.
Oh, okay. So they're going to take care of everything.
They're going to take care. And I think
the Saudis know how to throw that money around, boy.
And I think that's something that for me was very, very important. Mm, I think, you know, I could have half more money, but he wouldn't make me more happier than stuff like that. And, you know, you kind of like work with people that you feel like, okay, they are trying their best, their very best to make you feel comfortable, feel happy.
Right.
I think it's also a partnership, you know. It's not like one shot, okay, take everything that I can take and go. How can we build something? Like, is it like somebody that I can trust? Can we build something for the future? And then when you feel like yes, you invest into that relationship.
Mm, okay. So June, they negotiate the fight. Is it 12 rounds?
10 rounds.
10 rounds.
Yeah.
10 rounds, and they've created a new belt, right?
Yeah.
And you're happy with the money. You're happy with the conditions. You're happy with everything. So yeah. Then in June is when you go hardcore boxing training. Like, when did you start, like, hardcore boxing training?
I was training boxing already. No, like, I was in a camp.
But you're recovering from your knee surgery, first of all, right?
Yes.
So
yes.
You can't kick and you can't wrestle.
I can kick. I can wrestle. I mean, obviously.
But you have to be careful.
I have to be careful. But
how is the knee now? 100%?
I don't have to worry about, like, kick, wrestling.
Right.
Just knee. My knee is probably 90%. I mean, when you get a knee surgery.
Did you get any stem cells or anything?
Not yet.
How long are you in town for?
I had a PRP.
Mm-hmm.
I'm leaving tonight.
You're leaving tonight?
Yeah.
There's a company in Austin, Ways to Well, that I wanted to hook you
Ways
up
to
with.
Ways to
Well,
yes.
Stem cells.
I get in contact with them. I even get them do my exam. And I think Eric Nixick put me in contact with them.
With Brigham?
He sent me a contact.
I can take care of that, too.
With Brigham?
Yeah, I can take care of that, too.
About the same, sir, if we have a time. And I think
you should
gonna,
do that.
Yeah, I think I'm going to give you the shirt.
Yeah, for sure.
You know.
It'll help you. It definitely will.
It's very important to take care of, to maintain the vehicle.
Yes, obviously. Yeah. Yeah, and what a vehicle it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically, when you're going to put it in a big crash like this.
So, yeah, right? That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, because Tyson Fury is a monster.
He's a monster.
I stand next to him. I'm like, damn, this guy is big. Right?
Big.
I'm like, you really need to go full force.
Yeah, he's a big fellow. And he's very good. Very skillful.
Oh, I mean, man.
You jump into the top of the heap. Maybe ever.
And then I was there at the press conference next to him. And I'm like, yes, look, my fat belly. I'm a fat pig. I'm this. I'm like, don't you fool me.
Yeah.
I have seen you.
Yeah. He tricks people with that belly.
I'm like, don't you fool me. Don't you trick me, Tyson. I have seen you box. And you does a box as a fat anything at all.
No. No, because he doesn't. He's an animal.
If you just focus on his body, then you'll be like, oh, I think easy job. No, right. Man. When the guy's in the ring moving you, I'm like, okay, is it like something that they are remoting or something? I'm like, no, don't you fool me.
No, he's very, very skillful.
Yeah.
Very skillful. But, you know, you have probably the most sensational punching power I've ever seen in the heavyweight division in the UFC. It's you and Derek Lewis. You're the two biggest knockout artists ever.
Maybe, but again, I think in the heavyweight division, everybody can knock everybody out.
Yep.
The problem is to connect.
Yes.
That's the most problem, bro. Yeah. When you walk, everybody hit somebody in the shin,
right.
It's going down.
But can you
how
connect?
To connect the delivery system? And it's something that I heard once from Teddy Atlas, and it stuck on my mind, like the delivery system.
Mm.
You can have the biggest missile, but if you can't hit your target,
right,
it's useless.
So when do you get involved with Mike Tyson? When did that start happening?
In training? Or
yes. Because I've seen videos of you training with Tyson. How much have you trained with him?
Not too much. He comes time to time. Not always. He's not always with me. But if you look like 4 years ago, exactly 4 years ago, and that's when Tyson and I, we started hit each other on social media.
Mm-hmm.
And 4 years ago was the first time that I met Mike Tyson. I was on his podcast, The Hot Boxing. And one request that I initiate at that time was like, whenever I fight Tyson Fury, would you be in my corner? And he said yes. That's even on my Instagram. It's still on my Instagram. Like the next day, I put that as a caption. Like he said, I asked him if he will be in my corner whenever I fight Tyson Fury.
Nice.
And nobody believed that this could have happened. Like, okay, cool. Then what? And when I get the fight, I'm like, bro, that thing is happening. That thing is manifesting himself.
Wow. And so Tyson agrees to be in your corner. And who are you training with mostly for boxing?
I'm training with Dewey. Dewey Cooper. Yeah. I also get this this guy from France named John Bumba that I used to work with him, train my boxing with him. He's a young, very young guy, you know. But I like his style, the way that his approach and stuff, and I really have a good connection with him. So what's up, I reach out. I mean, even before the fight, I was working with him, taking him in Cameroon, get some training already. Then when the fight get announced, I talk with him. Then I brought him out. So he's in Vegas with me.
And so you started your journey in martial arts. You initially wanted to be a boxer.
Yes.
And then when you went to an MMA gym, they convinced you to fight MMA.
When I went to France.
Right.
Yeah. No, he was even in a boxing gym that they convinced me to be an MMA fighter.
Really?
A guy from a boxing gym named Didier Camon, the first boxing gym that I get into. But he was also a martial artist himself. And he said, bro, I think you have a very good potential. I think your best outcome now regarding your situation, because I was still homeless at the time, I think your best outcome would be MMA. I'm like, what's MMA? He started to explain to me, like, you know, come. I'm like, ah, okay, that sport that they do in the cage. He said, yes. I'm like, ah, I have seen it. He said, if you train some takedown defense and jujitsu, what is jujitsu? Started to explain. I think you're going to be a UFC champion one day. What is UFC?
And how old were you when this was happening?
27. That was in 2013.
It's so crazy that
June 2013.
People don't understand that you started this journey as an MMA fighter so late in your life compared to most. Like a lot of these guys, they're training when they're 14, 15 years old. They're in MMA gyms and having amateur fights.
Yeah. And I forced my way into a MMA. And that's why, like, there was a lot of things that I didn't understand properly. I didn't learn as an athlete growing up. And until I get to a Stipe fight, the first Stipe fight, Man, that stupid fight taught me a lot about combat sport.
Yeah.
After that fight, I was at the press conference and telling people, like, I think I have learned more in this fight because here I've been, what, almost just 4 years? 4 years and a half since I've been doing, but not even 4 years and a half since I've been doing MMA when Crazy. I first stipped the first Crazy. Time. Yeah. And I said, I learned this night, tonight I learned more than I have learned in the past 4 years in this game. And I think people didn't understand, but I meant it.
Well, you certainly showed it in the rematch. You certainly showed it in the yeah. rematch. And Daniel Cormier pointed it out. He said, patient, Francis. You were patient in the second fight. You didn't just rush out and try to take him out in the first round. Much more dangerous.
Yeah, because my previous fight before Stipe, I wasn't rushing on anybody.
What about Rosenstrike? You kind of rushed him.
That was after.
Yeah.
I mean, before the first fight.
Right.
I wasn't rushing off on anybody. I was knocking people out without rushing.
Right.
The mistake, the thing that I did is like I get to the point that I really started to think about the knockout, which is something that I never thought about it. It just happened.
Right.
Then I started to think about it. So that's where I rushed.
You were trying to make it happen.
I'm trying to make it happen. And obviously at that time, there was a lot of pressure on me and everything.
Yeah.
So I feel like I have to give a result. So that's why I was rushing. So I understand that night. I went back and watched that fight and I saw me fight. I'm like, who is that guy? He just looked like me, but I don't recognize why he's rushing. Why he's doing this? So then I understand. I'm like, okay. Maybe you just have to go back to your previous way, the previous you, and then things will be fine. Then I went back to my
previous. In the rematch, not only were you the previous you, but you were a way better version of you.
Mm-hmm.
You were very calculated, very technical.
It was 4 years, 3 years after?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, of course, I have learned. I'm in the sport to learn. I know that I have a deficiency. So I pay a lot of attention than those people that grew up as athletes, you know, doing different sport. I always take that very seriously, the fact that, I mean, maybe sometimes my power helped me to get away with stuff, but I know that I have a deficiency, you know, as far as experience and everything, even techniques, because sometimes I hear people say, oh, yeah, he didn't train wrestling in the training camp. I'm like, bro, come on. You think 2-3 months training wrestling in the training camp will out-wrestle somebody that been wrestling his entire life? No, you can't. You can just find a way to go around. But, you know, so that's how I process things. I think about the advantage. I always think of myself as the underdog.
So what did you change in your training after the first Stipe fight? Did you change anything?
First of all, I understand how to train properly. I understand how to train properly. And again, I just think about everything as a deficiency. I used to think that sometimes I'm like, oh, yes, he has a good striking. He's a boxer. He knocks people out. I'm like, no, I have no good striking. Everything has to involve. You know, whether it's my striking, my wrestling, my jiu-jitsu. That's why people keep training. The day that you think like, oh, I'm good at this, that's the day that you start to go down. Because you can't stay in the same place like this.
Right.
You're going to permanently try to go up. And even if you are not going up, that's how you can maintain your position. But if you stay comfortable with something, that's the day that you start to lose it.
Mm.
So I changed everything. I focus on everything, like all the aspects. You know, that fight really helped me a lot. I think about my diet. I think about like the discipline stuff. I mean, usually I'm good with discipline, but I still think about everything, put everything in prospect, like, okay, is my diet okay? By the way, after the Stipe fight, I decided to cut soda out for a couple while before. And since then, I never drink soda.
You were drinking it a lot before?
A ton. A ton.
Even in training camp?
A ton. In training camp, I was eating croissant, everything. I was like, no, I'm heavyweight. I was just focusing about my weight and not about my condition and all those aspects. I didn't know. You know, the night before the Stipe fight, I was in the Foco de Chao eating all those steak.
That's good.
Really?
Yeah, that's good for you.
Before the fight?
Meat.
Oh, no. It's not good at all.
Not good?
No, at all. What's... I was heavy as shit.
Oh, you ate too much. Did you eat stuff with the meat, like potatoes and rice? And
of course.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. That's where it is.
The night before the fight, maybe two hours or maybe 1 hour before worked in the arena. I was at Foco de Chao.
An hour before you went to the marina?
Yeah.
Wow.
No, in the arena.
Yeah.
Because I went to the arena like maybe 2 hours before the fight, but 3 hours is not enough.
To digest all those
meat and stuff.
Yeah. And so in that fight, you learn all the lessons and then you change your diet, you enhance your discipline, and you keep working on all your skills.
Yeah. Then, you know, how we are talking, we were talking about patience.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I walk into the Stipe fight, the directly with fight, with like constantly tell myself, be patient. And I was there just like telling myself, I think I wasn't even in that fight. I was there, but I was still fighting Stipe. I was like, no, be patient. Be patient. Be patient.
You're still thinking about getting tired in that first fight, getting taken down, getting control.
No, really. I was just thinking about like patience.
Patience. Patience.
But I overdo.
We overdo.
You know, I overdid it and it was too much. That's how it turned out. But I was like, patient. You get this. You get this. That's why at the end of the fight, I'm like, is it over or we still? I was confused. I didn't know that he was even the third round.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I was really messed up mentally. I didn't know. I thought I still have a round.
So what was that feeling like?
And my corner was telling me, they was telling me everything's good. Like, okay, I think you get one round. The second round, maybe you get this. I don't know. And so I feel like everything was right. So my mind was playing me really bad. That fight.
So what was it like when you went back and watched that fight?
I didn't watch.
You didn't watch it?
Yeah, I feel bad. You know, I feel like I waste a bullet. An important bullet.
Yeah.
And then...
That sets you back.
Yeah. I feel very bad. And then the reaction about it, how the way people react about it, you know, you get to the point that I kind of like tell myself like, okay, screw this. Fuck everything, man. You know, the reason why I get into combat sport, basically MMA, was because it was fun. I was never going to do MMA. I just kept training like, oh, it's fun. I like it. Let's keep going. Then I realized that that fun wasn't there anymore. And that's why I was falling down, because I start focus on about what people think, people reaction, people feelings. And then I forget the reason why I started the sport. So now I get the second fight against Curtis Blade in China. I'm like, okay, this might be the end. I don't think if I lost this fight, it's going to be good for me.
Right.
But at least I earned it. I earned it how I started. Just by fun. Just go there. Enjoy yourself. Have fun. And don't worry about what's next. And then 45 seconds, the guy was down. And then Ken Velasquez, 25 seconds, the guy was down. I was just there to have fun. Junior Dos Santos, the guy was down. I'm like, seems
so
like having fun.
You found your groove again.
Yeah, like having fun is exactly why I'm doing this and is why I'm good at it. Let's just do it, you know. So I try not to put pressure on me. I'm like, every fight, I'm like, I'm going to go there, do my best, make sure that everything that should have been done is done on my end. And the rest, I don't control it.
Have you ever worked with a sports psychologist?
Man, I don't believe in that. At Rhyme.
No?
No, I don't believe. I think everything is in our mind. What you can go out there trying to find all those stuff, but you have it in your mind.
Right.
You can speak to yourself.
Right.
You can question to yourself. I mean, I don't need a sports psychology to tell me why I'm doing this. It's out of passion. I do this because I love it. It's not a job. You understand?
Yeah.
I question myself, like, why did I get here? How come did I came from where I came from and get here? Then I find all those reasons, and then therefore I put my stuff together, right? Maybe some people do. Some people clearly need people to, like, help them to control themselves. I see that in a lot of fighters, basically. They need, like, a coach or something, somebody to tell them what to do, like, they don't know. Like, to tell them what time to train.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know you have a fight. You schedule your training at this time. You have this and this to work on. You can schedule that and get there every day at the same time. Do your thing, go home, get ready for another day. But some people do need somebody to get them that.
So do you schedule all your training?
Yeah.
Everything?
I schedule everything.
Really?
Yeah. And my team, I organize all my team, you know, mostly about people that I feel the good energy about, because, again, I don't believe in so many things. I don't believe in, like, oh, this guy is the great, he's a great trainer, he can do this. No, I believe that everything comes from a fighter and the energy that people around him can bring, can help him win. So when in my team, I favor people energy. People like how the energy that they brings around, you know, I favor them. And that's how I judge if somebody is best or not, is by his energy.
Mm.
And that's how I get along with pretty much everybody of my team. I judge everybody based on his energy. If I feel like I'd rather have a good person next to me, and then, not to say my team is great. They are all great. Everybody is very professional, commit. But if I feel like somebody has this energy and not even great as great, I prefer that person than somebody that is great trainer and don't bring that energy, because the energy is very important.
Yeah,
you know, when you start to get tired, when you're in the tough situation, the voice that you can listen and to trust is more important than the technique that you can learn. You can know all the techniques in the world, and if you get there, your mind is not right, you are not doing shit.
So but the energy of the people you got, that's all down. You got a great trainer, Dewey Cooper. He's fantastic.
I still get Dewey Cooper, even Eric.
Eric Nixick.
Eric Nixick.
Amazing.
We're still in here. Because I remember even how we get together, he wasn't most like a coach. I was in a fighting Junior Dos Santos, and I have only Dewey Cooper or Win Markel on my team. And I reach out, I asked Markel, like, we should bring somebody in the corner or something, and he talk about Eric. Then I'm like, I always meet Eric around, and he's nice. And I'm like, yes, let's try him. And then we get to the locker. Suddenly, I feel the energy was great. You know, I'm like, man, this is good.
Mm.
I like this vibe.
Yeah.
In my team. That's, for me, is enough.
Mm.
You know, that's why, like, sometimes I understand. Once I saw Mike Perry, he went to a fight with only his wife in his corner. And then people was criticizing him. I'm like, I understand him.
Mm.
He's doing the right thing. He understand how the games work. He just want a voice that can speak to him when he's tired. Somebody that he trusts.
Right.
And all those stuff and everything.
He already knows how to fight.
Yeah. He knows how to fight.
Yeah.
Because nobody is going to raise your hand and punch on somebody's head.
Right.
Or, like, nobody is going to dodge a punch for you. Nobody going to say, oh, knock him out now. You know,
right.
It's fighting game is mental, more mental and improvisation.
Mm. So you schedule everything. You schedule your strength and conditioning. You schedule your sparring. You schedule everything. You just do it all based on how you feel and what you need to get done?
No, like I schedule. I mean, I get a strength and conditioning, for example, for this camp. I get Tripar is out here with me. So we talk about the goal. What is the goal? What is the deficiency? What do we want? Where do we want to get by the fight? We are 12 weeks out. Okay, what is what we want to work on? And what is would be the good space? Then we get that as schedule. Then with the boxing team, we speak around. But I always try to get my team together so sometimes they can just work together. They don't always need to come to me on staff, you know. They can, my team can communicate together on the, also on my schedule. But yes.
So when you train and you do strength and conditioning, are you using a heart rate monitor? Are you paying attention to your resting heart rate, what it's like when you wake up, your heart rate variability? Do you get involved in any of those things?
Sometimes, not always. Sometimes I even do the test to see where I am at.
VO2 you know, max.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The yeah, even the VO2 max. But we focus on, I think, like, the most important thing for me right now, my endurance.
Mm.
It's all about my endurance, you know.
Do you have other injuries other than your knee?
Injury, no. I mean, you get sore, you get
right.
If you get to a training camp to the end without pain somewhere, then you better worry.
You probably didn't do enough.
Yeah, you probably didn't do it right.
Yeah.
So that's the thing.
That's the
reality of the sport. You can like train hard for 3 months and feel great every day and don't feel like something's wrong. No,
right. That's
mean.
Yeah.
You're not doing something right.
Is it easier to train for boxing because you don't have to do the wrestling, you don't have to do the kicking? Is it like less likely that you get injured?
Sometimes you think so, but when you get there, it's different. You know, like in the first 2 weeks, it wasn't even a training camp, it was a pre-camp. My first 2 weeks in boxing, straight boxing, I felt the difference. Of course, you get excited because, oh, you're not going to kick or take down or this. It's just boxing. You don't risk injury for your knee and that, because now I always think about my knee. Then you get there, you start to hit mid, hit parts, do all those stuff, always your hands up, and then your shoulder start to hurt. Then you throw more punch in 2 weeks than you have ever thrown in the training camp, in the two, three month training camp. Then I'm like, there is a difference. You know, your shoulder feels different.
Yeah.
Like, it's not the same thing. In MMA, you throw 1-2, kick, 1-2-3, kick, 1, take down. Daily boxing, wrestling, cage wrestling, all those stuff. Now, in boxing, your hands has to go all the time. And when he's not going, he has to be on your face, protecting your face. Otherwise, you're going to eat that punch clearly.
Yeah. So when you prepare for a fight like this, you've never had a big professional boxing fight before, and this is the biggest of all time. I mean, you're literally fighting the greatest heavyweight of all time.
Yeah.
How do you know when to peak? How do you know, like, when you're ready? Because you haven't done this kind of training before.
You will never be ready. Even at the fight night, you will always think like, oh, if I have this, maybe I should have done this instead. Maybe this would have helped me. You know, when is the go time you have to go? So you just have to make sure to get there in your best, you know.
The best you can do.
The best you can do without burnout, because there's also a balance in between.
Right.
Because if you overdo, then you burn out by the time you get to a fight.
That's why I was asking about heart rate monitors
and
checking your resting heart rate and heart rate variability, because one of the best ways to find out if you are overtrained is to check your resting heart rate when you wake up first thing in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's up 8 beats a minute, 10 beats a minute, most likely you went too hard. And then they'd suggest like an active recovery day, a lighter training day, where you're still moving, you're still working on technique, but you're not pushing. You're not really pushing.
And you, even when your heart rate monitor indicate that, I used to use the Aura watch, mm-hmm. and when it almost indicate how you feel. You feel it.
Right.
You know, there is a, and then when you have a good team, they can also measure the mass of your training, mm-hmm. and they can also work around it. They know, okay, Monday and Tuesday we went hard on this, Wednesday has to be slow on this, you know, maybe work on technique, mm-hmm. or like on the strain, on this and that, all those aspects. And that's why a team is very good about, because you can like by yourself think about everything.
Mm.
No,
you need other people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You need other people to help you because things get so big. You need other people to help you. And everybody is kind of like have his own department to worry about. Mm.
And so when you're training, how much sparring are you doing? How many days a week?
Three or two sometime. It depends, again, how you feel and how the recovery been. How was the sparring? You know, sometimes you get sparring and you feel like, yeah, even though you did the amount of round that you're supposed to do, but you wasn't that intense and this, then the next day, no, maybe you push again, you know, and sometimes you just go to a sparring and that's when it's hard. The guy gives you a hard time, you push, the pace is high and this. Then next day, maybe you need to recovery, not like recovery, but slow it down, give your shoulder some rest, because you always end up on maybe heavy bags. Like, it's all about that balance. But it's like two, three a week.
And are you sparring with any world-class heavyweights?
World-class, so far, no. The only guy that I used to spar with, which is a world-class heavyweight, it's Carlos Takam, and he's now just coming in the training camp because he's also gonna fight in on the card, yeah, which is a world-class, and we're gonna get there. We were talking about some guy that we were bringing, like experienced fighters, boxer to spar.
What is it like for you to spar boxers and not be able to kick, not be able to take them down? Does it create any adjustment for you?
I wasn't an expert of kicking either way. So
but you kick hard.
Again, I wasn't an expert of kicking, and I wasn't an expert of taking down.
Right. That's true. But you did defend your heavyweight title, a lot of it with wrestling, because of your knee.
Yeah, because I couldn't do... That was the only option that I had.
Right.
You know, I couldn't... I wasn't comfortable moving.
Right.
I was permanently...
We should tell people, you went into that fight to defend your heavyweight title with torn knee ligaments.
Yeah.
Your knee was fucked up going
ACL,
into that fight.
ACL, MCL.
That's crazy.
Meniscus.
And you're fighting Ciryl Gane, who's the most agile, light-footed heavyweight.
He moves everywhere.
Ooh.
Like, I'm like, okay, I need to figure a way.
Nobody moves like that guy.
Yeah. But one thing that helped me into that fight a lot, I believe in myself. Mm. I know that I'm going to get him. I wasn't looking for knockout. Once again, I wasn't looking for a knockout, but I know that I'm going to have my opportunity at some moment in the fight.
Mm.
That's where, like, the first two rounds, I was literally, like, worried about how to move and this and that, like, oh, my knee, oh, this, you know. But I was still confident. And after the first two rounds, I'm like, man, I'm losing. It can't end like this. No, not like this. We need to do something.
Switch it up.
To switch it up, man. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Was that a satisfying victory for you, though, knowing that you could beat one of the best heavyweights in the world with only one leg?
He was the satisfying, yes, by far the best, because it wasn't one fight at that night. That night, I was fighting like four opponents. I was fighting my demons, my knee, this, everything.
The contract.
I was fighting the contract. I was fighting the narrative. I was fighting everything that can go wrong.
Mm.
And I couldn't strip this fight better than this. If you had asked me, like, how would you like to win, I would say knockout, obviously, which is the easiest way.
Right.
But everybody predicted me to be like, okay, he has a chance in the two first round to knock Siri out. After that, his power is going down. Then his cardio is going down. He has nothing. It was the completely opposite way. They say, oh, Siri Gunn has a cardio after two rounds, after a fight. He can fight two fights a night. I'm like, bro, come on. Depends, you know. And at the end of the fight, I'm like, I'm not sure that he's ready to fight another fight, to take another fight on tonight, you know. And unlike what they predicted, I lost the two first round, and I started to win from the third round, which is like the contrary of what they predicted.
Yeah.
So,
but nobody knew that your knee was that fucked up either, though. The UFC, the UFC knew it was injured. They let you wrap
it,
right?
They know. They know everything.
They knew everything?
Yeah. When I did the MRI, he went to Dr. Davison, and then when he was explaining it to me, he said, only four people know about this by now, Dana, Hunter, you, and I. That's when he was, how he was explaining.
Did you consider pulling out of the fight?
I thought, yeah. In, you know, in the perfect scenario, I would have pulled out a fight, you know. But I didn't want to give them an opportunity.
Another extension.
It wasn't about the extension. It was just to bury me. I don't want to give the opportunity to bury me.
Yeah.
You know how, you know how in this world they say, okay, I'm going to die with my saw in my hand.
Yes.
Yeah. It was about, it was like, okay, I'm dying with my saw in my hand.
Yeah. Whew, that's a lot of pressure.
Yeah. But when I heard about, when they explained me what was going on in my knee, I was very worried. Then for somehow I called Kamaru, or he called me. Anyway, we were in the phone and we were talking, and he was explaining me like, what he had and this. And I remember once I saw him in Vegas when he fought, I think it was Kobe Covington the first time. And the guy was messed up, man. He was walking like this in the fight week, getting cortisone shot here and there. I'm like, damn, this guy is going to fight. No, maybe it was Tyron Woodland. Said, so this guy is going to fight on Saturday? I was so worried. I feel bad about it. Man, at that night, he was sharp. This is the guy that I saw him on Wednesday. He was barely able to walk. He was sharp. And I know exactly what was wrong with him. So that kind of like hurt me to believe that, man, when comes the moment, you know, fighting, your fighting instinct would take off.
Kamaru is so strong mentally.
Oh, man.
If people knew how bad his knees are so bad. He has to go backwards downstairs sometimes.
Sometimes, yeah. And then you'll be like, oh, his hips, his this. I'm like, bro, you can't pull out the fight. No, he's going to fight. And then he show up to the fight.
Looks perfect.
Looks perfect. I'm like, there's no way that is, you know. So I kind of like, that's kind of like inspiring me, like, feel better about myself. I'm like, man, I can't do this. You know, like, it's not over yet.
Right.
I still have something left. So yeah. I keep, even though I couldn't train anymore, I couldn't rest, so I couldn't do anything. And I was 3 weeks away from, 3 weeks and a half away from the fight. So I started to focus on my air bike. You know,
cardio,
up work, you know, body work, but wasn't easy. But I think my air bike helped me a lot, because from not being trained for over 3 weeks before the fight and get there like that, wasn't too bad.
That airbag's a motherfucker. The air bike, yeah.
Hey,
air assault. I use the Echo bike, the Rogue Echo bike.
No, I always use the Assault. I like the Assault one. You know, yeah. I like the grind. Like, you feel the monster.
Gears, yeah.
Yes, you feel the monster. Like, you're pushing into your knee.
Such so, a good workout.
Yeah. I have it in my living room. I sat in the room and put the TV in front, and I will ride that thing, like, for hour. Yeah, to work on my cardio.
Yeah, it's amazing for cardio. It's my favorite machine.
And for heavyweight, you better. It's not great for you being out there running in the concrete or putting all those weight on your joint.
Right.
With the air bike, you do the same thing without putting all those stress into your joint. I'm like, man, I think this is like probably the best device for me.
Yeah. No, it's the best device for a lot of people. It's a phenomenal piece of equipment. So what else were you doing for recovery? Do you get massages? Do you use the sauna? Do you use the cold plunge? What else do you do?
Physical therapy. I just get a cold plunge from Plunge. And then I set that up. I was able to make it work this week. I use that. I do the hyperbaric.
Nice.
Yeah, I do the hyperbaric chamber. I have a friend in Vegas who has a hyperbaric store. So she's even partnered with Misha Tate and Janelle. They have a Desemon hyperbaric. So I go there sometime. They have this hardcore one. I used to like get someone in my house, but he will be the soft one.
Yeah, it's not as good.
Yeah, it's not as good.
No, you want a real one.
Yeah, you can also, I think that can only go to 1.3 or something.
Yeah, you want two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With the hot one, you go to two.
We should explain. That means two environments, twice the normal oxygen in the environment.
Yeah. So I go there time to time, dive into that thing.
Yeah. No, that's phenomenal for recovery.
Yeah.
That's great. So you're using all most sophisticated materials and equipments. And what about supplements? Do you have someone who monitors your supplements and your nutrition?
I try. Yes, for nutrition, always. When I have a fight, I have a chef, yes.
Yeah.
I have a chef. I always do that when I have a fight. But for supplement, I don't know. I never able to, like, connect get along with supplement. I always, like, I don't know.
Take them, don't take them, forget
yeah,
to take them.
Yeah, take them. I used to be at the PI, and then Glenn, they will always, like, get those back ready for me and with all the vitamins and how to take it every day. And I would take it, like, 2, 3, 4 days and after.
Just quit?
Yeah.
Did you notice a difference, taking it or not taking it?
I don't know.
It's all hard, right?
I don't know.
It's all hard.
It's really hard.
One thing that you don't have to think about with this fight is your weight. Like, you don't have to make the 265-pound weight limit.
Well,
what are you walking around
at? It's still different because, like, the weight limit, when I fight MMA, sometimes I get there at 260, below 260.
Mm-hmm.
It's not because I'm cutting weight. It's
You're
because,
not thinking about it.
Yeah, I'm not thinking about it. I mean, I do work in order to, like, get my weight down, but I don't cut weight. I don't, like, have a big process of diet, you know, to cut weight. No, I just train properly and eat properly with the chef and sometimes by myself to get there. But even now, I still have to think about it because based on the game plan, you know, I don't want to have an extra 10 pound, unnecessary 10 pound on me.
Right.
But at the same time, I don't also want to lose a strength because, as I said, this guy is a big dude.
Yeah.
And he has his skills to lean on people, weigh them down, stuff like that. You know, I think they're going to be a little bit of a wrestling there. I need to get my strength right. So he has to be a balance. And I walk around like 275, 280. My normal weight, walk around weight. But I think might get in the fight at 265. I don't know. It depends on how we decide to go.
Mm. Yeah. So without giving away too much of your strategy, how do you envision this fight taking place? Like, what, you've never boxed a heavyweight like him before, but you obviously have tremendous skills and power. How do you envision this fight taking place?
Well, it's very hard to envision. You know, sometimes I just visualize the fight, me there in the ring. I suppose I'm going to be the blue corner, being there waiting for him to get in the ring. He knows all the sides of the ring. He's been there. He knows all the corner, how to move, how to cut. everything, and I'm gonna be there, figure out how to cut the ring, you know. It's really hard. I think I just gonna focus on like being composed, you know, don't think about too much stuff. And again, I would like the knockout, but you know, Tyson is very sleeky, and you can go like you want to knock him out. So I'm preparing in the way that this fight can go all the way to 10 rounds.
Mm.
Yeah, which is a disadvantage for me. I never fight boxing at that level, you know. So managing my energy, how I going to be feeling with all the pressure and the adrenaline, how are they going to be like in the 10 rounds, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So how can I maximize it the most? It's about that. It's a lot of, I visualize it a lot. I think about it, trying to be there that night, waiting for him, see him come, do his show, you know, get there, trying to do his slick stuff, you know, weigh me down, slick, dirty boxing, come close, trying to lean on my head because he's taller than me. But I think, yeah. But I think I'm gonna handle that dirty, dirty boxing properly, because usually, like boxing guy, I have seen a lot in sparring, and since everybody wanna do the same thing like Tyson, like trying to prepare you for that, there's still those wrestling trick that you can get into. Sometimes I'm like, go under the shoulder and step in their back.
Right.
Yeah. Which is something that boxer, they don't do, they don't know. So, yeah, indeed, I don't have to worry about that still.
Are you going to have, like, I know that when Sugar Ray Leonard made his comeback, one of the things that he did was he had actual fights. Like, to prepare himself so he didn't have any ring rust, he would have actual fights in the gym with, like, regulation-sized gloves, no headgear, 10 rounds, 12 rounds, whatever it was. He would have actual fights.
I think we had that a lot of time. I mean, we fight MMA with 4-ounce gloves.
Right.
Right? And we don't fight with headgear.
Right, right.
With kicks and everything. So I'm not worried about that. And we used to spar. When you're an MMA fighter, they don't spar boxing with the protection.
Right.
The headgear and stuff. Right. They just go in the gym. They don't worry the size of their gloves.
Right.
But boxing guys, they come to the gym, everything is checked. Like, what's the size of the gloves? They check the headgears, the cup, and all the stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, now I do that to protect myself. I have a fight in less than 6 weeks. So I take all those precautions. But I don't think I'm going to do that by now. You know, if I was 6 months out, yes, I can do something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But now I have no interest of doing that. Right. I know I can deal with that. I have got hit with 4-ounce gloves, you know, in the fight. I've been there. I haven't done boxing yet, but I've been in fighting.
Yes.
More than once. So I'm going to be okay. And one thing that, we are going to talk about is Tyson gloves. He's very tricky with his glove.
With
I think
his
he's
cheat.
Yeah,
you think
I've
he's
heard.
Cheating?
Yeah, I've heard a lot of complaint about his gloves, which is like his glove has no protection.
Where have you heard this from?
Even when he fought Deontay Wilder,
yeah,
he complained about that.
Yeah, but
Derek Chisora complained about that,
yeah.
And that's what we are talking about the team. And then I'm like, oh yes, the UK commission, the gloves. I'm like, bro, we're gonna get there. We need every glove to be checked. You don't tell me about this commission. All the gloves get to be checked. I don't want. If you want us to fight bare hands, bare knuckles, let's go bare knuckles. But don't give me a 10-ounce gloves and wear an 8-ounce or 6-ounce glove because he has no protection. Nah.
You really think he's doing that?
I think so. I mean, I have heard.
Yeah, I've seen the Deontay Wilder videos, but they're not convincing. Here's why. They're showing those videos in slow motion. Yeah. And in slow motion, it looks like his glove is flopping all over the place.
Yeah.
But that's just because it's in slow motion. When you watch him boxing, he's doing this. You know, he flicks, flicks, flicks. He shows you it, pop, and then he drops a big punch in.
But
so in slow motion, it looks like it's all floppy, like it's not connected. And you think that the gloves are really like just flopping around, and where his knuckles are is where the wrap is. But that's not the case, because if you look at the length of his arm,
yeah, but
none
his
of that
opponent,
makes sense.
But his opponent complains about his gloves.
Yeah, I don't know if they're right.
I mean, there might not be.
I don't know if they're right.
We have to check that.
Yeah, well,
we have
I'm
to
sure.
check that.
I think it's legit. I think he's legit. I just think he's that good.
No, he's good. He's good.
And his style of like keeping that hand loose and flicking. So sometimes that wrist opens way up, and if you look at it in slow motion, people are like, look, his glove's not even attached. His glove's attached. You don't know what the fuck you're talking about, because after he does this, he does this. There's mm-hmm. no way he's doing this if his glove's not attached. It's attached. He just looses his hands because he a lot of his punches, he's just showing you things. He's showing you things. Bang! He's showing you this, and then he's doing all this. So a lot of it is loose, and he's just popping you with that, like a whip, you know?
I think we have nothing to lose by double check.
Nothing to lose by double check.
Yeah,
that's
because
true.
It's been more than once that people talk about his gloves.
Right, but nobody
And even his opening. Even his opening.
Yeah, I'm sure they talk about it. Yeah, he kicks their ass. So. People looking for reasons. Like, Deontay Wilder thought he got poisoned. You know, he thought right? He thought a lot of things. But, you know, that's because the guy's that good. He's fucking good, man, you know? And I just think that style, when you look at it in slow motion, it might look like his gloves are not attached, but they are most certainly attached.
But in the boxing world, you have to worry about everything.
World. You're right.
It's a dirty world.
That's a
you
dirty
have to
world.
Worry about everything.
Yeah.
I mean, if
world.
Somebody says something in the boxing, you better just double check.
Double check.
Double check.
What has Tyson brought to the table? Like training with Mike Tyson. Like what did he help you with, and what kind of strategies did he give you, and what kind of thought process? Like, what is his approach to you fighting Tyson Fury?
I mean, asking that question makes me feel like you don't really understand. Like, I grew up idolizing Mike Tyson.
Yes.
Right?
Everybody did.
And then having a dream to become a world-class boxer, my first boxing match, Mike Tyson is in the gym like, oh no, this, that. I'm like, come on a moment. Like, this is real. This is where I get. So it's real. This
your
is legit.
Your first boxing match.
Yeah, this
Mike
is legit.
Mike Tyson's in your corner. Crazy.
I get Mike Tyson cheer. Like, even mentally, like just thinking like that.
Like hearing him cheer you on.
Sometimes I'm like, yes, it's him, right? Like, I'm not tripping.
You know, have like, to check, because it's really Mike Tyson.
I'm like, okay, this thing is serious. And not only, he's there and he believes that you can beat this guy. That's how it is. So, like, he put his faith on you, a guy that have done everything in boxing, that is there. I'm like, so he see me as somebody that can do this. We were talking about like mental stuff. There's some mental stuff that are heavy, right? Not to mention his technique. Mike Tyson has a unique style that I wish I had his style, but I'm not going to expect to copy his style because it's unique to him.
Well, he's also built very different than you.
He's built different. He was always short. The shortest guy in the room.
Yeah.
So with his opponent, which is the case in this fight, I'm the shortest. His technique, if I can get, and then one thing that people always see is how strong he was. He was knocking people out, and nobody was impressed of how he was able to move from left to right, and this, how his footwork, and all those stuff. How he was that short and was able to get into the distance when he wanted to hit and all the stuff, right?
Yeah.
Which is something that very interesting. With Mike Tyson, one best thing that you can get from Mike Tyson is the footwork.
Footwork. Yeah.
Change from left to right.
Yeah.
You know, because in boxing, everything is about your foot.
Mm-hmm.
And his footwork, his power was based on his base, on his footwork.
Yeah.
You know, like when you have a good base, your punch is definitely stronger when you don't have a good base. mm-hmm. how to have that good base to send your punch when you're
right.
base, right?
Yes.
And if you look at Mike Tyson, all his fight in his career, he was all about the base, the footwork.
Yes.
I watch his training sometime on YouTube still, and then you see how he's flipping.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, it's not possible that heavyweight can do this.
I know, for a heavyweight, yeah. that's just crazy. So here's you yeah. guys working yeah. together.
Look. And this was 4 years ago. This was the first time that I met Mike Tyson. This was in 2019 on his podcast. And he was always about his footwork.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, he was so well-trained. And when he was young, the way he would move
you see?
In
yeah.
and
look,
yes,
look. Yeah.
yes.
And he gets you go on that knee, I'm like, okay, everything is in the leg, in the thigh. You do that like twice, I'm like, okay, I think I need some low body workout. I'm not strong enough.
Yeah, he had a lot of footwork and movement. Yeah. And
that's why his leg is like this big, mm-hmm. like a tree trunk.
Right. A lot of bobbing and weaving too.
Yeah.
People forget. They just think he was a hard puncher.
Yeah,
just
no, people,
fight.
Yeah,
so
people
elusive.
Forget. He showed you how he showed me how he was training for his leg, go all the way down and do like this duck work and stuff. I'm like, man, come on. And that's what he did all his yeah. career. And people don't see that. They just see like, oh, he hit hard. He's strong. No, he's technical and he's hard worker.
Technical, hard worker, tremendous speed, perfect yeah. technique, everything.
Yeah.
All the above. And he yeah. hits hard.
He yeah. hits hard.
Everything.
I mean, when you put when you combine all those stuff, mm-hmm. there's no way you don't hit hard.
Right, right. So does he have an idea, like looking at your frame and Tyson Fury's frame, does he have an idea of the way you should approach the fight? Does he give you pointers, like what he thinks that you would do that would be successful against Tyson Fury?
Of course, because his entire career, he almost fight people that was like Tyson Fury.
Right.
So, and that's why I explicitly went to him mm. about this fight, because I feel like, again, if I was able to have a quarter of what Mike Tyson have, this fight would be an easy fight.
Mm-hmm. You think so, really?
I mean, there's not an easy fight, but he will be an easier fight.
Mm. Wow. I mean, out of all your day, 24 hours a day, how often do you think about the fight? Every minute?
Not every minute, but now that you're talking about it, I don't even know that I'm thinking about a fight when I think about the fight.
Right. It's just natural.
It's just natural. It's my life.
Yeah.
It's like the most important thing is what I do.
Yeah.
Every day. Even when I don't fight, even when I don't have a fight, I think about fight. It's just like my thing. So I can't tell exactly how often I think about a fight. But I know sometime I'll go to sleep and then he will just come in my mind and then you start think, start exploring those stuff. And sometimes it's exciting. I mean, most of the time it's exciting. Sometimes it's also nervous. You're also nervous about like the thought that you have, I'm like, hey, man, maybe I'm missing this. Maybe I'm not taking this serious. Maybe this, maybe that, maybe that. So, which is good because after you have those feeling, those moments that you're not too confident, sometimes I'm like, I think I shouldn't go to bed. I didn't do enough today. I'm like, no, I shouldn't do enough today. Like, I need to do more.
So here we are now. What is today? September 21st. So you're about 6 weeks out? Is it about? Five and a half weeks out.
5 weeks and 2 days.
So you ramp up now, and then you taper off the last week.
Mm.
And when will you be in Saudi Arabia?
Earlier.
A couple weeks out?
Yeah, a couple weeks out. 3-4 weeks.
So exciting, man.
Yeah. You will be there.
I wish I could be there.
Walk around, process, think about the fight.
Yeah.
Think about everything.
Yeah.
That single day, that your world gonna change.
Yeah.
How, what's gonna happen? What would October 29 looks like?
What do you think is gonna happen?
It's gonna be a celebration. It's gonna be disappointment. What's gonna be? October 29 morning.
Waking up. Exciting,
you're
huh?
Gonna feel like the king of the combat sport.
There it is.
Oh,
look at that! What's gonna look happen? At that poster. Damn, that's a great poster.
Oh no, you haven't seen anything.
Really?
Anything at all? The production behind this fight, insane. We have like 5-day production.
Really?
At some point, I'm like, hey guys. But the good thing about the production, wherever we are going for the, we are going for production. I have my team with me there. I'm like, I still have to train. Regardless of a promotion, I have a fight coming up. I have to keep my training schedule. And then they bring all my entire team with me, from the chef to the coach, nutrition. Everybody is with me. So I'm like, okay.
Do you have a prediction for this fight?
Man, prediction for this fight. Knocking me out. No, I don't want to have a prediction, because I will want to follow.
Right.
That might stick in my mind, and I want to execute my prediction.
Right.
Maybe just let train it flow. Properly, let it flow, get there, and let what happen. Just fight. Focus on fighting. Make sure you fight. Make sure you're ready to give everything in there.
Yeah.
And some moment.
It must be so exciting for you to have made that deal, though, because everybody said that wasn't going to happen.
Yes.
I read so many commentators saying Francis is wasting his time, they're never going to give him a fight. And then
that was you were asking me like if this deal is a money. That was a money too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, to prove people wrong. Like, hey, you motherfucker, you were wrong. I'm right again.
Well, for people who don't know your story, how you went from Cameroon and went to Morocco and got sent back, where you tried to make it across to Europe, what, seven times? And you were
I failed six times.
Yeah.
Succeeded the seventh time.
But that kind of resolve, and that kind of discipline, and that kind of drive, that's very special. And you, I think you got something from that experience, and to prove what you're capable of.
No, don't think. You have to know.
I know.
You have to know. Like, sometimes I think about my life, why I was going to, my upcoming, going through all this process, I was always pissed, upset, like, why all those things happened to me? Am I cause? Like, what it is that...
Right.
Nothing can go right for me. But when I think about it today, even though I can go back to that path, I think it was a blessing. Because like the life lesson that I have learned from my journey, seems like my journey was just preparing me for this moment, for the life that I'm having now. Like, you get to the point that, you know, the moment that I kind of like find out that I'm rich, it's not the moment that I check my bank account and see money. It's not the moment that I own a house. It's not the moment that I had a house, a car. It's the moment that I check myself. I'm like, okay, what can possibly happen to me that I can handle, that I haven't seen? And I say nothing. I can handle everything. I can overcome everything. So therefore, I wasn't afraid of anything. I can go ahead and let what happen. I'm not afraid of falling, because I know that I have the ability to stand up. And that's what my life taught me. Again, even though I didn't choose that part, but he did taught me that way. And I think it's like one thing that carries me where I am now. Yeah.
So let's talk about your PFL deal. So where are they going to get opponents for you? Like, who's in the heavyweight division right now in the PFL?
They're going to figure that out.
So they probably have to hire people, just try to contract people that are...
Yeah, and they are looking for an option because my fight's supposed to be... I'm supposed to fight in the PF beginning of next year, February or March.
So after this fight in October, you'll take some time off and then go to MMA training.
Yeah.
And then get ready for the PFL.
I have... there is some legit people in the division. I have this... There is this guy, Rena Ferreira.
Mm-hmm.
I think this guy is legit. Nobody is seeing him. Nobody is like... really talking about him. I'm like, keep eyes on this guy. You're gonna see. He's like 6'5", 6'6" guys, Brazilian guy. But the way he moves, I'm like, the way he box, the way he does things. If you check that guy, you can tell me about it.
Mm.
Yeah. So there's other than that, what can there be? Who is in the roster right now? Ante Delia. It's Ante Delia, I think. Yeah.
So they're those probably going to have to recruit. Gonna fight. They're going to have to recruit some top-tier heavyweights if they want you to fight them.
I wish.
Mm.
Oh, yeah. Otherwise, they have to make a tournament to get a winner mm-hmm. that are going to fight. But I think they need some recruitment.
And how many fights is your contract with the PFL?
Multiple.
Multiple?
Multiple.
Five, six?
No. Oh, three? No. I can't get those.
You don't want to give out the details. But you're happy with everything, though?
No, I'm happy. I'm happy the way that it goes, the way that the structure, how I'm the freedom that I have inside the contract.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also more happy and excited about the PFL Africa. Because in the deal, we have this PFL Africa that we have to launch in the beginning of 2025. And that's how we're going to expand MMA in Africa. You know, it's something that I've been working on, trying how to get this there. And it was hard. And now I get a whole operation that's going to be dedicated for that. I mean, the work is in the process already. But... The first event gonna be beginning of 2025. So I'm quite excited about that. I want to see some those monsters that are in Africa get there, come over and knock people out, chop their heads off in the octagon.
One of the things you've done that's very nice is that you've negotiated a minimum purse for your opponents too, right?
Yeah. Yeah, which is, I mean, I don't want just to feel like a guy that goes there and grab the money. Okay, give me the money. I want this. I want that. Mm-hmm. Right? And then I'm fighting this guy that probably doesn't have a chance because he's struggling. He can have a proper training. You know, I'm here having my fancy life, my organized training. I can have all the doctor that I want. I can have the team that I want, nutritionist. This coach, that. And then I fight a guy that didn't have a chance and he's in this big fight because without him, the fight, without the opening, the fight is not happening. So he's a part of it. And now I'm like, okay, don't just make me look like the grab and go guy. What is my opening is having? It's going to be a big moment. It's going to be in the big fight, right? What is it going to be for him? So we set a minimum of $2 million for him.
Wow.
And again, that's a minimum. If they get somebody that have a leverage to negotiate for more, then you can negotiate for more. Mm. But if the guy is the guy that doesn't have a leverage, they don't just have to pressure him like, oh no, you have to fight this opportunity. We are doing this for you. No, you're doing this for money. He better have his has his own money. So can we at least guarantee that for this magnitude of a fight, he will have at least $2 million as a purse? And that was something that wasn't even difficult to have because, again, PFL was very open about that. He was like, That's our vision for the sport. Granted, we didn't have to go back and forth for that. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Oh, we didn't. That didn't take 3 minutes to get done.
Because how much do you think an average UFC fighter is paying, getting paid in the heavyweight division for a fight?
I don't know. I don't check their contract, bro.
Right.
I know how much I was making, and sometimes it wasn't fun. I know what I could have made, but I know that he was. I have to pay another price for that.
What other price?
Contract freedom.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, to.
So how good was the money that they were offering you to sign for the UFC?
He was good. He was good enough, but.
It's just the other parts of it.
The terms.
Yeah.
A lot of.
Where's the PFL getting all this money?
Huh?
Because they don't have a pay-per-view model. So how are they getting all this money?
They are setting a pay-per-view super fight. Super pay-per-view fight. So
for you,
I'm gonna
when
be
you fight.
Yeah, when I fight. And there's also Jake Paul that will potentially fight in the super fight.
Who is he going to fight? Because I heard they're talking about him fighting Nate Diaz.
I don't know.
If they did that on an undercard with you, that would be a big draw. You know, because their boxing match was pretty close.
Yeah. That would be massive card. But, yeah. I like, and I do like the PFL business model. That structure as a business. So
yeah. Well, my hope is that it looks like they're buying Bellator, right?
Yeah. I heard that. Nothing has been confirmed. I don't know why he's taking so long. We should have been hearing some news.
If that happens, that changes a lot. Because then you get some real legit heavyweights, you get some real legit lightweights, welterweights, real legit fighters.
Yeah. Imagine the roster.
Yeah.
The merging of the roster.
That would be very good. That'd
very
be,
interesting.
You got guys like Johnny Elbin, who's high level, middleweight, one of the best in the world. You get some really good fighters over there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that. But, you know, importantly for the fighters, there needs to be competition. There has to be options.
There have to be options. There have to be competition.
And at the end of the day, you, the heavyweight champion of the UFC, leaving the UFC and going to the PFL is good for everybody, I believe. Because I believe it strengthens that organization, which strengthens the opportunities for fighters.
Yeah, and maybe open a lot of fighter eyes. Because until most fighters, they have like a one-sided vision. They don't see it. They don't even know that they have other opportunities.
Right.
Which is like something that make things very complicated for them. Then they're just like, okay, whatever. What else can I do? I have seen people that get caught by the UFC and then they go somewhere else, whether it's in PFL, and I'm like, oh, I have a new life. I didn't know that I could make that much money on my career.
Right.
I remember once I saw a tweet, and that tweet stick in my mind. He was from Corey Anderson.
Yes.
After he got caught or he left the USA and then had a deal with Bellator. And then he went there, he make a tweet like, UFC give me a career, but Bellator give me a life. I love that tweet.
Yeah, he said he made way more money in Bellator.
Yeah. I wonder why. I mean, after this fight, I'm going to go out there, fight in the PFL. And for one fight in the PFL, I'm going to be making maybe twice or three times what I have made in my entire career or in my entire life.
That's crazy.
So you understand the difference between career and life.
Yes. That's crazy. Good for you, man. Good for you. And good for the whole sport. I really believe that. I really believe that all that competition is good for the sport.
I believe that too. And I think the sport is really changing. You know, like now we get all those different organizations. And soon we're going to have something in Africa, massive. There's already some organization in Africa, but we need to get pushed. Kamaru Usman has his own organization named, I think, African Knockout. There's like some organization in South Africa, somewhere else too. And then, yeah, but with the PFL, the way that they're going to structure, the fund that they're going to, how they're going to fund it, this is going to be massive because we are structuring the PFL Africa as same as the PFL Europe. Because the PFL is having a regional PFL. So every fighter from Europe, PFL fighter from Europe, is fighting in the one pool to get a champion. Then we can fight in the PFL Global. In Africa, they have the same, we're going to have the same thing. Whoosh, they're going to have basically almost the same pay. And when you think about the currency, it's make this in Africa like massive, massive economy, investment in the economy. Mm. Because those guys are going to have money and they're going to start thinking about like how they train properly, where who they train with, they're going to finance, they're going to pay people around them and business going to grow around it and help infrastructure taking off and those things, those stuff. I'm very excited about it. And the reason why is because, like, sometimes I want to train home, and then I realize I can't have even a partner, sparring partner, a legit sparring partner, because they don't even have where to train. They haven't been training properly. You know, they don't have a high competition. Mm. They don't have stuff like that. So they can dedicate their time that much for training rather than go working to provide for their family.
Right.
You know, but if they were able to dedicate all their time for training, how would that look like? You know, I might just as well move home in a couple of years and just chill and have my set my training, come here. Mm. You know, set something like what you did here in Africa.
Nice.
Yeah, and just sit there, have my calm, have my training partners at home, you know.
Yeah.
Enjoying it from there.
And what an inspiration that would be for them. So young fighters that, like, don't know, am I ever going to have a future? And then someone comes from Cameroon, goes to the UFC, becomes a champ, goes to the PFL, fights Tyson Fury, and then comes back to Africa and trains with everybody.
I'm back already. It's not like after fight Tyson Fury, I'm back. I have a foundation. I have a gym there. We just opened the second location.
Beautiful.
In Douala. And this is a massive facility.
That's awesome.
You know,
that's
huge.
Beautiful.
Yes, we were helped by a betting company named Premier Bet that helped us build this massive in the city, bro.
Like, that's great.
Yeah, in the city. And we are about to build the third one. We're trying to do like some charity event, make them fight because it's boring to just train and train and train. You know, they need something to get motivated by. Mm-hmm. So we put like some events, you know, like the fight people from different country, so they get you get them excited and
yes.
focused, you know.
All
so,
right.
Well, and I enjoy that part. I enjoy that process.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, Francis, listen, congratulations on getting this deal. Congratulations on getting this fight. And I wish you all the best of luck in the Tyson Fury fight and your PFL fights. And if you're fighting, I'm watching.
Thank you. Thank you. Unfortunately, you will not be calling.
I can't be calling.
Come on, Joe. Oh, man.
I wish I could.
I can still see you walk in the octagon with your mic. Mm-hmm. I think I'll be looking with Joe around.
I won't be there, but I'll be there in spirit.
Okay.
All right.
I love that.
Well, thank you, my friend. I appreciate you very much.
Thank you. Thank
Good
you,
Good luck
Joe.
To you. All right. For Bye, sure. everybody.
Bye.